SA2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios, where you alter your locus aureus by warming your synapses with regenerative radio waves. This warms your brain to a crispy and crunchy 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Cal? Can you feel it?
Worms.
And the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse anybody can use it except for governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So what's new and exciting in your world?
In my world, a lot of laughter coming from the Women's March that occurred over the weekend. Particularly something in D.C. in which...
Did you just assume their genders?
There we go. So in D.C., with the snow coming in here and the reflecting pool was frozen, and it's only about like 2-3 feet of water in there, but they thought that would also be a cool place to march on, and many of these marchers, well, not many, a good handful fell through these. So, you know, I guess physics and gravity doesn't mesh well with their aims, which... You know, I can't really imagine much many of them would know what is exactly what they're marching for, right? Here in the West, you find that, you know, it would be hard-pressed to find rights that men have that women do not, you know, so I find it, do you know what rights they're marching for?
No, and from what I've seen, I don't really follow these things, but I did see somebody that was out interviewing folks, and for the most part, it sounds like they have no idea what in the heck Happy Halloween they're marching for. But right. in regards to what you mentioned about rights, I saw a cartoon, and it shows somebody reading a book, and on the front cover it says, rights that... or women's rights or rights that women have, and then inside the book it says same rights that men have, and the woman is saying, no, that's not enough, because quite frankly enough. from everything I've seen out of these feminists, and I think this is largely I think they're called the third wave feminazis, they don't want equality, they want extra equality, they want equality plus,
right? They want you to pay for it, though, of course.
Yes.
There was another sign that someone was holding out there. It's hilarious. And what they're asking for was, quote, make them pay for razors if we pay for tampons. Lou, did you get your government-subsidized rations of razors? I didn't get mine.
Yeah, have you seen my beard? No, of course not. Somebody made the joke that she wanted to climb my beard, and the response was, Lou's beard climbs you. Oh, it's getting bushy. But anyway, that's a little bit crazy. I have to think that that's got to be a fake or some kind of trolling or something like that, because, there's no government subsidy of razors. I mean, granted, there's the Dollar Shave Club and different groups that you can sign up for and get good deals on them, but maybe they want men to pay for the razors that they shave their legs with as well as the tampons. I don't know.
Right. The most hilarious thing I saw was a photo that came out in Australia. So you had a couple thousand marchers out there, you know, doing their thing. And lo and behold, above in the sky, someone had used, it cost about $4,000 to get a plane to write in letters. I guess you have eight characters that you can do. And so this guy chose Trump so you can trigger them in mass.
That's a waste of some good chemtrails there. So I did see an interview, some internet personality, I don't know who he is, Feckless or something like that. I don't know. It's a name that has letters in it. That's all I can remember. And he was interviewing people at the march, and I really knew that I was going to hate it if I watched it, but being that I am a journalist of sorts, and by of sorts I mean not at all, I decided to take one for the team and have a look at it and see what they had to say. And there was one one woman there, and I'm gathering that she was rather young by the sound of her voice and also the childish ideas that she had. But she was advocating for a full communist utopia, and she's the one that said communist utopia. That's not Jeez. Me adding in there. So at least she's an honest commie, which is pretty rare. But she also had a sign, I think it said, to kill Trump and a couple other politicians. Interestingly enough, and not that I'm advocating the government guns on that, but saying to kill the president is something that the Secret Service takes a dim view on, and they usually go pay people a visit for stuff like that.
Yeah. It's funny because, like, a lot of these groups, I mean, it wasn't really a pro-women's march. It was an anti-Trump march, you know, call for what it
right.
is.
Right. And well, it's like the anti-war left prior to January of 2009 when the anti-war left. It turns out that they weren't really against the war. They were against George W. Bush.
Right. Right.
Which I can understand that, but you know, if you're going to be against Bush, just say that you're against Bush and admit that you love war.
You right.
know, they didn't all of a sudden become peace bonds when Obama took office.
Right, exactly. So yeah, I think it's kind of hilarious. You know, you kind of see them for what they are by their past actions. Right, there wasn't all this grievance and anger at Obama. You know, especially at his deportation of immigrants, right? They're all about, you know, save the illegals. Even right now in California, Commifornia. But, you know, where was that when Obama was doing that, right? Where was that when Obama ended the wet foot, dry foot policy for Cubans, for those refugees to come to the U.S. soil? There's no outcry or protest against that. So really anything that they do is really just anti-Trump. It's just for show, you know, for those virtue points, social justice potato points, make themselves look cool with the other people. There's this guy that said, you know, my wife is at work, my daughter's at school, so I'm here at the Women's March for them.
So is he trying to get a gold medal in the Victim Special Olympics? What's he?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if he does have a wife or daughter, I think he's just trying to get laid or something. Which you find with a lot of, it's like that Scooby-Doo thing where, you know, you reveal who the monster was. You know, it's a monster turns out to be a male feminist, you know, pretending to, you know, to be with one of the liberal values. And you find them being revealed now. A lot of monsters out in liberal Hollywood. All these Democrats, all these feminists coming out, turns out, you know, there's waves of them sexually assaulting people. So, you know, it's this weird veneer that they hide behind. Kind of like sometimes you'll find, you know, weird politicians that are so anti-homosexuality and you find them caught in a bathroom. You know, things
constantly
that they hate
caught.
The most, you know, right. Things that, like, they're vehemently about. You know, turns out they have, like, that's their dirty secret that they can't reconcile with or something.
Yeah, if I had the money to be able to not work and just go and investigate politicians for scumbaggery and other bad behavior, to bust them for hypocrisy, so just go around with my video camera catching them doing all the things that they're railing against, I think I would go after the low-hanging fruit and target the ones that are always ranting about sexual deviance and degeneracy and homosexuals are evil and all this other stuff. The ones that preach the family values the hardest, because they just right. seem like the easiest targets. It's like, hey, look, come get me. Come right. bust me.
It's like they have to make up for something, right? You know, if you have it, you know, that'd be something that people can see. You know, it's like trying to sell t-shirt businesses, you know, we're an honest t-shirt business. Well, if you are honest, you know, your customers will know that. You don't really have to go out there and exclaim that.
Right.
That's kind of what I see out there. I think very much is a anti-Trump.
Yeah. Something that's interesting, and And I'm not a supporter of government borders in any way, shape, or form. I'm a supporter in private property lines. But there's a number of videos out there. I saw one again today. It was Dianne Feinstein talking about how illegal immigration is horrible and it has to be stopped and everything else. And that was the talking point of the Democratic Party for quite a long time. There's also a compilation that I've seen a couple times. In the quote that I've seen is, you know, check out Trump during this speech, and it shows him making his silly faces as other people are talking. It shows Bill Clinton talking about how bad illegal immigration is and what needs to be done about it, and then also Obama doing the same thing. And it's really amazing to hear all these so-called champions of the underdog that are slamming the underdog. They want to send the underdog to the pound, is what's happening. They're calling the dog catcher on the underdog, and it's almost as if it's like in 1984 that all this stuff gets flushed down the memory hole. It never happened. It's almost like when the banner comes down during Hate Week and they find out that they're at war with somebody else, and they start chanting that they'd always been at war with this other place instead of the one that they'd been at war with. It's really amazing to watch this. It's unbelievable. And not to just bash Democrats, the Republicans and conservatives are just as bad. I remember watching a compilation of Hannity where he was talking about during the Bush years that was necessary for the NSA to expand its surveillance and for all this police state stuff to happen. And then after Obama's in office for a little while, he says, you know what, maybe there needs to be a check on presidential power. Mm-hmm. Maybe civil liberties need to be respected a bit more. And more, there needs to be more caution with it. And I'm pretty sure, I haven't listened to Hannity in a long time, but I'm pretty sure that all those platitudes have been completely abandoned now that Trump has taken office.
Yeah, I mean, I think they just passed some new security act of wiretapping or eavesdropping again. But harping back to what you're mentioning earlier in terms of things that Democrats were kind of against immigration at one point. Yeah, there was a big particular case, and not too long ago, in 1999, in which Elian Gonzalez, do you remember this kid?
Who dropped the chalupa.
Yeah, mother escaped from Cuba, died in those waters, and Democrats sent the kid back.
Well, you need a proper communist indoctrination. We'll be back with the freedom indoctrination just for you. Yes, you, the one that's listening right now.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Cell 411 is a great free app for Android and iPhone. It allows you to set up public and private cells for dealing with crime, emergencies, setting up neighborhood watch, activism, and even protecting your kids from bullies on the street or at school. Cell 411 gives your cells turn-by-turn directions to your location with one touch on your phone. There is also a Bluetooth panic button available that can be worn on your wrist, belt, or around your neck. Cell 411 has real-time chat for each alert so you can discuss the incident with family or friends in real-time video streaming. The video is stored on Cell 411's servers so your evidence cannot be deleted if your phone is taken or destroyed. Cell 411 has decentralized ride-sharing that allows for payment in any form, crypto, barter, silver, cash, etc. Cell 411 does not take a cut of your fare. Get Cell 411 free on Google Play and the iTunes Store, or go to getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com.
Freedom Fiends. And we are back. This is Sloan. I'm joined by Cal. And I have to tell you, I am so happy that the government is back up and running again, because you just have no idea how difficult it was without any roads or without any drone bombs going or any of that stuff. The IRS shut down. Oh, wait, no, nothing shut down. I think it's really funny that all these small government conservatives were throwing a Schumer fit, because literally a Schumer fit, because the Democrats voted to shut down the non-essential parts of government. It was absolutely hilarious to see the hand wringing and the whining and it was just beyond pale. These are the same people. They're constantly complaining about government. We need to shrink government. We got to get rid of these useless tax eaters, blah, 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 blah. And then as soon as part of government shuts down, the non-essential part, they start freaking out like it's the end of the world and they're never going to get another meal again.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that's, in terms of shutting down, do you remember the last time it was shut down?
Yes.
2013,
a couple years ago.
Yeah, there's some horror stories that came out of that, though. Of course, nothing shut down. You know, if your income tax is still, you know, if the government's still taking money from you, you know, they're still kind of working. They're still getting paid. Some of them, like politicians, yeah, they're still working. But remember this horror story that happened a couple years ago. There was tourists in a park, and things were shut down. Many parks, and where. These tourists were stuck inside the park. The park rangers wouldn't let them leave, like the resorts. And so many of them were stuck inside the park. They were not allowed to leave, as if like you need that kind of money to kind of keep that kind of park up and running.
Well, you can't walk around in the woods without a government.
Without a government, right?
How do you think the trees are going to get there, or the mountain range?
Right. But yeah, there's stories of which like people lost like tens of thousands of dollars, trying to go like river rafting in the Grand Canyon, but they couldn't because the government shut down, and so they weren't allowed to. I guess the permit were suspended.
No government.
It's gone anyways.
No water.
No government. No water.
Yeah. What I thought was great, and this was really wonderful. I love this. All these people with their flag lapel pins that were in Mordor on the Potomac. For whatever it was that they were there for, they want to go to all the monuments and everything. So you got a lot of veterans going to the Vietnam Memorial. I think there's a World War II Memorial. Just all these different things, and they're going out there to see their monuments. And the park police or whoever it was, they went and put up barricades and said, no, you can't go in there. And they moved the barricades. They walked around them. They stepped over them, and they made America defiant again for just a couple days. And I think if these people had resisted tyranny in the way that they resisted the closing of the parks and monuments or the metric system, I think there'd be a lot less tyranny. I don't think Obamacare would have ever been a consideration had they put forth as much resistance.
I remember reading about recently, when Trump got elected, National Park Services were kind of talking smack in a way at Trump, and they had like their own Twitter war. This happened, just last year, and so their attempts to kind of, which is interesting, right? You have your, what do they call, like the deep state, or you have several government agencies that are not toeing the line with the executive office. Is interesting, but it's interesting at the same time where like the National Parks is trying to say, we're on your side, we're on the people's side. Yet when that government shut down, they weren't much with on the people's side at all. There are lots of people planned weddings, millions of dollars. Economic activity were lost. A lot of people were. Just economically ruined because park rangers wouldn't allow people to just wander around in the park and do their thing and have fun. So it's just something to remind people that just because they say park rangers, it's like it's because you put the words government next to it doesn't mean that they're this benevolent entity that's for the people, by the people.
Yeah, that's completely out the window. That's kind of like feminists for equality.
Right. I remember reading this, I think maybe it was Rothbard that wrote about it, how many of these national parks came to be, and that what's a good way for you to have a great property value and for the government to take care of the maintenance of like vistas, of wilderness in front of your home? You sell that land to the government and then they turn it to a national park, and you keep your property on the edges along that park. And then there you go. You have a really good home value of land there.
And we will be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Quit telling me what to do! Quit telling me what to do! Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
Rule number one of surviving hyperinflation is simple. Get rid of your money. Given the speed with which money is shedding its value, holding on to it means you're losing out. The second you're paid, you run out as fast as you can to buy something, anything, while you can still afford it. It's better to hold almost any asset than money, because assets hold their value and money doesn't. Find a can of tuna, buy it, even if you hate tuna, even if you have no intention of eating tuna. You can always trade it for something else later. Tuna holds its value. Money doesn't. This article is a recent article. It's from the Washington Post. In Venezuela, money has stopped working. It's written by Francisco Toro. And the title is a little bit misleading. Money hasn't stopped working, per se. It's just really, really been destroyed. So, down in Venezuela, and we talked about this on numerous occasions, the centrally planned economy has done what it usually does, and it's created a lot of starvation. It's not real socialism yet, because there's still some people that are alive, but things are collapsing at a nice pace. The currency is being devalued. A country that is rich in oil resources can't feed its own people, and the government is centrally planning themselves deeper and deeper into their own destruction and collapse. And that could have been any currency that I was talking about. It could have been the old Weimar marks. It could have been the Zimbabwean dollar. It could be whatever they destroy in Argentina every couple of years, whether they need to or not. It could be any number of currencies, but this particular one is Venezuela. What say you, Cal?
Yeah, absolutely. This is what happens whenever you have government coming into the market and mess things up, especially with price controls. So I remember following this story right when it started, when there was lines for bread and milk and diapers, literal bread lines, I think it was like 2 years ago when it began. And I covered it a lot back then too. So when you put like price controls on milk, And then there's other production factors that go into that milk that the government will say, well, you know, maybe they're too high, and the price control just creates a domino effect, at least other price controls to like all the production factors of creating milk or a product. And that long chain will inevitably make it not worth for the producers to continue making them. And then the government cracks down on black market goods, and it's the result of that we're seeing right now. So, you know, you have the problem with the money, you have also the problem with the lack of goods out there so bad that just last week there was several people running out there like zombies, like an episode from Shaun of the Dead, just running towards and killing a cow, beating it until it's dead so they can take its meat from its bones and just sate the hunger. This is what socialism looks like.
Exactly.
Hunger, starvation, desperation, disparity, poverty. This is inevitable. And this is a history that it's not unique to South America. It happens every other generation.
It's happened in a lot of places.
Yeah, yeah.
To include Europe.
Yeah, you have Greece having the same problem.
Or the old Italian lira. They destroyed that just unbelievably. I remember the exchange rate on that being unbelievable back when I was stationed over in Germany back in the late 80s and early 90s. And it was tens of thousands of lira to the dollar. It was probably as bad as the peso was. And then they'd come around every now and again, revalue it, move the decimal point, drop a couple zeros off of there, and start over.
Do you know how they're going to try to start over in Venezuela with cryptocurrency?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they've decided an oil-backed cryptocurrency. So I guess with the Bolivar and the Petro, that will be two mismanaged, centrally planned government currencies.
Now, here's the thing, though. I think it's kind of weird that they're going to go into cryptocurrency, right? And they're going to go into something. Cryptocurrency, if it's a blockchain, it's going to be shown where the money's going to, right? They're going to see exactly where the money's moving to on the blockchain, right, on the ledger. And if it's a cryptocurrency, then there'll be a set finite. Don't you think it's a weird trap?
No, to get it won't be then? Finite. It could be like Doge, where it has no cap. So, yeah, it's going to be Dogecoin. Because it's Venezuela, it'll be called Perocoin.
There we go.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there doesn't have to be a completely open blockchain to where you can track every transaction. There are cryptocurrencies out there. I believe Monero has a very strong degree of anonymity to it right now. I'm not super familiar with it, but that's what I'm hearing about it. But yeah, and the only reason that Bitcoin has the finite scarcity of 21 million Bitcoin is because that's what it was programmed at. That's what it was set up as when it was first started. But I'm sure that there's a way they could possibly go beyond the 21 million, and it likely will at some point, I suspect. But I don't think there's any law of gravity that's keeping it at 21 million, and there won't be any. There definitely won't be any restrictions on the Petro or the Doge, Petro Doge.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I would say there can only ever be 21 million Bitcoins that can be mined, and that'll be it. But you can extend a decimal. So, the decimal is extended, I believe, like to 8 places. And so you could, I think there's like, 13% of the original code is left. It's been rewritten and upgraded ever since. And so they could, by a majority or something like that, extend it to another decimal, and then you have more Bitcoin. That is possible.
But I don't consider the extending the decimals to be a debasement, because it's not increasing the total amount. It's just making it a little bit more divisible.
Right. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking about it as well. But I think, though, if your government does get on a crypto and gets one that is capped, that might be like it's the sword that'll fall on itself on, in a way.
Yeah, I have a hard time imagining them doing that. The only thing that would be more difficult to imagine than the Venezuelan government doing that would be the U.S. government doing it.
Right, yeah. So I guess it'd be funny if Venezuela comes up with this and turns out to be another scam coin.
Yeah, GovCoin.
50% pre-mined.
115% pre-mined. I remember reading an article a few years ago, and this is when Bitcoin was first. It wasn't even gaining in popularity yet. It wasn't brand new because I knew about it, but it didn't have anywhere near the acceptance or notoriety that it has today. And the Bank of Canada had offered a $50,000 reward or commission for somebody to write the code for a cryptocurrency for their central bank. So the central bank had commissioned it, and it was going to be called Royal Mint Chip. And I'm like, that sounds like the name of an ice cream, not a cryptocurrency.
Right.
But going back to this article here, a friend recently sent me a photograph that tells a powerful story about the situation Venezuelans find themselves in now. It's not a very good picture, really. Just a blurry cell phone shot of trash, some wrapping material, an old CD, the detritus left behind after a store was looted last week in San Felix, a city in the country's southeast. And yet I can't stop thinking about it, because strewn about in the trash are at least a dozen 20 Bolivar bills. Small denomination currency now, so worthless even looters didn't think it was worth their time to stop and pick them up. The photo stopped me dead in my tracks. In theory, according to the official exchange rate, which long ago lost even a hint of connection with reality, each of those bills is worth $2. In fact, as Venezuela sinks deeper and deeper into the first hyperinflation the Western Hemisphere has seen in a generation, Bolivar banknotes have come to be worth basically nothing. Each bill is worth about 0.000, I think that's three zeros, one, at the current exchange rate, meaning you need to have 100 of them to equal one penny. So I mean, the Bolivar is almost like this, the Satoshi now.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, because the Satoshi is the smallest denomination of a Bitcoin. I think that's the one that's out at the 8 decimal points. So they're getting close.
Oh, my God. You know what we need to do? We need to get together and put together a care package of Tide Pods and send them over.
Yeah. I got a little story to throw in about the Tide Pods. But This is reminiscent of what was happening in Weimar Germany. The joke was, well, it wasn't even a joke. It was a fact of life that if you took a basket, if you took like a woven wicker basket full of Weimar banknotes, and you set it down on the ground, it went inside of the shop to go look at a cake or something like that. When you come back, the basket would be gone and the banknotes would be in a pile on the ground, and you get a ticket for littering. I remember reading accounts of people getting paid up to 2 and 3 times per day, and as soon as they got paid at work, they would slip the money through the fence to their wives, and their wives would go spend it before it lost any more value.
Right. How do you think people here in the United States are going to deal with that when the time comes when the U.S. dollar is also worth basically next to nothing?
They're going to do what they always do. They're going to pray to their god of government to help them out. And of course, the god will, in his booming voice, say, "I have heard your prayer. Therefore, I will take control of the economy and make everything work better, or send anybody to gulag that sabotages our central plan." We'll be back.
Arms.
And the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Hi, this is Mark Edge of Free Talk Live. Michael W. Dean's book, User's Manual for the Human Experience, changed my life. In a culture that attempts to turn you into a compliant victim, this book gives you implementable steps on everything from how to be aware of your environment walking down the street to business, to how to handle a toxic person in your life. If you're a human, you need to read this book at least once. Go to Amazon and get the Kindle version, or paperback, or an audiobook of A User's Manual for the Human Experience.
Worms. So, in the Washington Post article, it's interesting how they talk about what you could buy with bolivars back then. So they say, quote, hyperinflation is disorienting. 5 or 6 years ago, the 500 bolivars on the floor would have bought you a meal for two with wine at the best restaurants in Caracas. As late as early last year, they would have bought you at least a cup of coffee. At the end of 2016, they still bought you a cup of coffee con leche, at least. And today, they buy you essentially nothing. Well, except for 132 gallons of the world's most extravagantly subsidized gasoline. So, lessons or things that you kind of come from here, is, as I always kind of look at it, is many of the social ills and problems that we have today, you can always find the common denominator being government. And again, in this case, it started off with price controls. In a way, price controls are, you can see here, price controls would be shown through minimum wage. Right, minimum wage is a type of price control. It's telling you the or price floor that it will create, and that it'll tell you the least amount of money that you can pay someone. Right, and minimum wage, you can see the damage that's done doesn't create any jobs. To find a better example of understanding minimum wage would be if you had a bicycle and you wanted to sell it for $20, but the government says you can't sell it for no less than 30, right? And that would be price controls. And so that would be your minimum wage example. And that's essentially what government has done with these products, from milk to bread to everything, until until there's nothing left. There was a story that happened a year ago where they sent in the police, the military, to arrest toy makers because they feel the toy makers were selling toys at too high a price, and they thought that they were exploiting people. So the government came in, arrested them, and then they started giving out the toys for like cheap or free. And of course, you know, what do you think is going to happen with the toy makers, the producers? It's not going to be enough for them to come back and try to get capital to restock or get in the business if government's going to come in and take it apart and arrest them. And the same thing has happened with a lot of producers, a lot of people in the market down there. If government thinks that you're exploiting people by selling your products or goods at a higher price than they deem it, they'll come and arrest you. So it's not a good place for capitalism. I don't know why a lot of people still say that it's a state capitalist location when, you know, capitalism is about respecting property rights. And that's anything but what Venezuela is doing down there. It's a socialist state. You know, tell the kid starving with the playful, you know, worthless bolivars, that's not real socialism. So you find then, not just Venezuela, that it's happened in many other places. Venezuela is just an example. You find that it happened in Zimbabwe. They had the $1 trillion note. it's horrific. And you could find then one day that the U.S. dollar will reach that point as well. It's lost 97% of its value. It's got 3% left to go. What happens then after that? Who knows? They say always stock up on bullets, on guns, coffee, maybe. Stock up on Bitcoin. But who knows? The United States here and the people here have not really experienced that kind of devastation in a long time. I mean, you have the housing bubble crisis, but, you know, nothing to the extent. Maybe the Great Depression. That, too, was also caused by the government. That, too, was also, in a way, price control. And that the government would create import taxes, kind of what Trump is doing now, right? Raising tariffs. And when you do that on foreign goods, what do you think foreigners are going to do with American goods? They're also going to increase the tariffs on that. And when you do that, when before that there was a market of cheap, affordable goods, farmers could not afford them anymore. Farmers didn't have access to cheap goods anymore. It was difficult for them to do what they need to do because of government meddling in their affairs. So because of that, they weren't able to produce the capital, the money to repay back the banks. And as a result, the banks started to fall like dominoes and weren't able to collect the loans. And then you created this cascading domino effect of similar to what's happening in Venezuela right now. And so you find, again, whenever there's a lot of social ills and problems, 99.99% of the time, you can find the common denominator being government meddling in fair and markets. We'll be back. Worms.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is Michael W. Dean's novel from the year 2000. It's entirely fictional.
Allegedly.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is a glorious story about a low-rent post-punk rock star, Cash Newman. Cash Newman is entirely made up.
Not a guarantee.
And is not based on any particular person.
Not a guarantee.
Cash Newman has lots of fun with strange ladies and with the party favors.
Don't try this at home.
And he hangs out with people who commit 3 felonies a page.
But that's none of my business.
It's all in good fun. And at the same time, it's kind of deep. But always spunky. Michael recently updated the book to a much better version. He released it as a paperback and for the first time on Kindle. As with this and all Freedom Fiends related things, please rate and review. Get Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women now on Amazon or at michaelwdean.com.
For entertainment purposes only.
Talk about from another socialist, not so great place to one closer to home, California. And California has a lot of problems also economically. In terms of self-defense, it has a lot of problems. Recently, a lot of laws just came out saying that in California, it's putting a lot of gun owners in limbo. With some of the things you can't do in California now, it's like you can't buy assault rifles. You can keep the ones you have in California, but you have to register them. And there's a lot of weird stuff about if you can buy ammo from another state and bring that in as well. It's a mess. California is a mess. But let's talk about the stuff happening there economically. How I think, maybe they should have their own state. There's a lot of push for Californians to separate, to secede, and create a new California, you know, which is great. Do it. Everyone should secede, especially at the individual level.
Right.
Secession. Right. But it's funny, though, because you find a lot of, liberal California. A lot of liberals are kind of against secession when it happened over 100 years ago, right? But now it's kind of funny how they're kind of pushing for it now when they kind of feel it in their pockets. And so that's a good change of tune, I think. And you find that happening in a lot of states, and especially like Northern Virginia. There's always been talk about Northern Virginia wanting to separate from the rest of Virginia because they're taxed the most. And, it does kind of make sense then if you're taxed the most, then you would think that a lot of the money should come back to your state or your region, which is not the case. And so there's a lot of that stuff happening in California. This stuff happens in Italy. There's a lot of like city states in Italy that are taxed so heavily and the money goes elsewhere than going back in their community. And so California right now is talking about its poverty levels, which is ridiculously high. So California, which is a big powerhouse economic, I guess on its own, if it was a country, it'd rank up there, I believe, like one of the top 10. That I remember looking at like a year ago. Some people compared it to like the economy of France like a year or two ago. But now, today, it's where nearly 1 out of 5 residents are poor in the great liberal heaven that is California. And that's according to the Census Bureau's supplemental poverty measure. And so you'll find several states and municipal benefits programs overlap with one another. In some cases, individuals with incomes 200,000% above the poverty line receive benefits. So there's a lot of benefits. There's a lot of welfare going out there. But people are still incurring this problem. So it's California then has 12% of the American population and is home today to about 1 in 3 of the nation's welfare recipients. Yeah, they're still poor. All right. So I think when we look at this sort of stuff, you find that time and time again, it'll show that welfare is not the solution. More welfare especially is not the solution. It only continues to add and creates more of a dependent class, as it's done with many populations, many people, especially black populations, American Indian populations. And here in California, it's rampant now. Funny story about welfare, though. There's one tribe, the Lumbee tribe, that has not been recognized by the United States government, federal government. And as such, they don't receive any welfare. They don't receive any money. But you won't find the Lumbee tribe today living in these camps and these reservations. You'll find them living in McMansions. You'll find them having lots of businesses and banks. You know, they have a really large, thriving community. And that's because they don't receive welfare money. They're not dependent on that. And as a result, they're able to produce a good, thriving community from that. So imagine if then that same application was applied to California instead of creating a population that is strictly ridden in poverty because they're giving them the handouts instead of trying to make them be productive. Maybe that could help. But you know, we're also talking about California, which has a very high taxes. Lots of tax, lots of regulation. It's difficult, I would imagine, for people to try to come out of that, even if they try to not give them welfare. You know, things that alleviate poverty in those places would be increasing your household income. And it's hard to do that when you have a lot of taxes. Hard to do that as a business decision. So if you want to alleviate poverty, you need to find ways to do that, which means removing government from that equation. Another thing would be lowering the cost of living. That again goes to taxes, regulations. California is a mess. It's a crap hole, as it were. Funny thing about crap hole, though, Trump never actually said that. It's apparently it was this Washington Post reporters that came out and mentioning that, paraphrasing, I guess you can say, but he never actually said that, especially publicly. There's this weird stuff like that he came up, you know, publicly, and people think that that's exactly what he said, but he never said any of that. There's nothing on the record. But, you know, there are places that are crap holes, places that I would not want to live in, and that would be California, California. But at the same time, not just in California, there are places, other places around the world that I wouldn't want to live in as well. He never actually ever said Haiti. It was assumed. I was going to say something about liberals themselves. But people forget that Haiti is on an island, and the other half of that island that they share is the Dominican Republic. And you can see the difference, even in space. You can see the difference on Google Maps. You can see the difference on one side, Haiti having more open markets, leaning towards freer markets, that they do a lot better. I mean, that hurricane came in through a couple of years ago, but you see there's a stark difference between Haiti, which has a lot of heavily socialist policies, and it's still a mess. It's the crime rates, it's ridiculous there, versus the other side of the Dominican Republic. They're doing actually better. they look pretty good. It's kind of like the same difference between North and South Korea. I think you can quantify these things. Places that are quantifiably not good places. And with the measures here that's shown by the poverty measure, California is one of them. I like to say that Charlottesville is Virginia's California with its liberalness, but yeah, that's something to kind of keep in mind. Alleviating poverty, increase household income, lower the cost of living. You can't do that when you have a lot of heavily liberal policies that increase this regulations and taxes there. It won't help at all. While Democrats want to give businesses, want businesses to give half their tax cuts savings to the state, it's difficult to pass new laws, I guess you could say tax laws. They lost their supermajority through the resignation of two Assembly Democrats, Matt Dabanek of NCO Los Angeles County, and Raul Balcaguerra of San Fernando Valley, Los Angeles County. Incidentally, amid sexual misconduct allegations. There you go again, right? Liberal Hollywood. Ramping in a lot of sexual assault cases. This is weird. Well, it's great that a lot of this stuff is coming up, but it's also interesting that a lot of these, because you'll find liberals to be full of feminists hiding behind the veneers we talked about, and it turns out that they're the ones who are finding or committing a lot of these sexual misconduct assaults, and I think that's kind of revealing, you can say. So we have California. You have San Francisco. You have some of them heavily in millions of dollars in debt. You have places. These are unfunded liabilities. There's no way for them to pay them back. In the same vein, Philadelphia is heavily in debt as well. Philadelphia will be next. There's other states as well that, like New York, is heavily in debt. But other cities, inevitably, these unfunded liabilities have an end to it. An end will be Detroit, and would be these government services or monopolized services falling. And one thing I guess we should talk about that we can connect it to, something that Ludwig von Mises created or wrote about in the economic calculation problem of socialist states, is that whenever you have government interfering in the market, when they monopolize a service or have like price controls, you remove price. Right, price is something that arises from multiple actors and producers and consumers that eventually emerges, and all of these interactions creates a price, this phenomenon, that then producers and actors, people who sell, can use that as a signal to see whether they were going to use this particular product to make this good or use another product to make this good, because they can see the price and see maybe it's, they can see the costs, right? They can calculate that. They can calculate whether they need to produce more goods, or they can allocate these resources. When government meddles into the affair of the market, though, they remove the price. They don't have those signals. They don't know whether they're overproducing or underproducing now. They don't know how to allocate these resources. And the result then would be the things that USSR experienced. There was like, I believe, bobby pins or like roofing nails that they forgot to produce one year. And so they're out of roofing nails. And not just goods like that, but this also extends itself to services. Just extends itself to other areas in the market that they can't allocate. Like the post office is a great example. The post office is a great example of a monopolized service that is heavily in billions of dollars in debt. And you look at their end of the year report, and they like to tout themselves as a private agency that doesn't need government money. But you know, you'll find that at the end of the year, you'll find that they do receive millions of dollars of government, nearly no interest loans. Things, of course, that the business has access to. And that's something startling. That's something that affects all government monopolies. That's inevitably its and its fate. And we'll come back with more stories. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com. Biptunia, music for the drive to Alpha Centauri. Biptunia's influences are Gary Numan, Brian Eno, Pink Floyd, David Bowie, Led Zeppelin, Grateful Dead, Frank Zappa, Robert Fripp, Blondie, Kraftwerk, and Dead Kennedys. Biptunia styles are trip-hop, rock, pop, glam, industrial, ambient, jazz, and space. Plus, it's got cats and is covered by the BIPCOT NoGov license. You can download Biptunia's music free.
go to biptunia.com. That's BIPTUNIA. Bravo, India, Papa, Tango, Uniform, November, India, Alpha. biptunia.com.
We're back. Interestingly, earlier this week, we were talking about crap-hole countries. I believe on Tuesday, the Ugandan president, Yoweri Kaguta Museveni, spoke out in defense of Trump, and was telling lawmakers at the opening of the Legislative Assembly in Kampala that he said that that he liked Trump because he spoke frankly, and he's referring to the misdirection, the claim that he said that it was a crap hole country, like there are African countries out there, Haiti and Salvador and places like that. And at the same time, Uganda does receive several millions of dollars in aid from the U.S., so you know you don't want to bite the hand that feeds you, but. It was saying that, you know, acknowledging that there are problems out there. And it's not as peachy keen as liberals want to make it seem to be, right? If it was peachy keen, then why are the people from, like, these kinds of places immigrating, trying to get out of those places, right? Why don't then liberals make a protest or say, you know what, you know, we're fed up with this country and we're moving to Haiti. If it's not such a bad place after all, you know, I think that'd be a great open defiance against Trump. But you'll likely not ever see any of that happen. Much like you never saw the celebrities that came out saying that they'll move out of the country. And I think Amy Schumer was supposed to be one of them, but that never happened. Do you remember any of the other celebrities out there that said they were going to leave, Lou?
I remember the folks that have threatened to leave over the years. I think Alec Baldwin threatens to leave every presidential election cycle. As far as this last time, I'm very happy to announce that I paid very, very little attention to the circus that was the 2016 election. Granted, I got my names in there quite well, but I really didn't pay a whole lot of attention to the rest of it.
But, you know, what about the memes? You did pay attention to the memes, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. I'd catch a little something here and there and make a meme out of it. Different things where Trump's talking about the socialistic policies that he's interested in implementing. When it comes to the border walls and everything else like that, if you look at the countries that have had the most prolific border security, the walls, the guards, and everything else, it's always the communist countries. So, really, what Trump has been looking to do is that he's been looking to make America a gulag again.
All right. And speaking of like gulags and socialist policies, you know, there. You know, people say he touts capitalism and stuff like that. You know, earlier this week, he was saying that he was imposing a 20% tariff, right, on the first 1.2 million imported large residential washers. 50%. He was putting washers and on solar panels, imported solar panels. You know, that's not 30, realistic.
30% on solar panels.
Yeah.
And by the way, a tariff is a tax. Right. So when you talk about all these tax cuts, you also have to look at the tax increases that are going to go on there. When he was talking about the 20% tariff on Mexico to help pay for the wall, all taxes are passed on to the consumer in the end. The companies that are selling these goods, if it's an excise tax, then they're actually the tax collector for the government. That's something else that the private sector does a lot better than the government. Is they collect the taxes because people actually go and buy this stuff. So the government's actually skimming off the top when they apply these excise taxes or these tariffs or whatever it is.
Right. And we were talking about earlier about like the Great Depression and how a lot of that stuff happened and occurred. It's government putting these types of tariffs on imported goods. And what do you think, of course, those countries that are sending this stuff will do to American goods? They'll put tariffs on American goods as well.
I want to throw a little something at you here. There were numerous recessions during the 1800s. And what is unique to the 1800s in comparison to the 1900s is that there were no stimulus programs. There were no different little projects. Is that music coming in? All right. I'll finish this thought when we come back.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Freedom Fiends, also known as the Cal Molinay Show tonight. Hey, we are back. I'm back. I have internets again. My internet's got drone bombed, or the government shutdown finally caught up to us up here, because we are in Bear Saskatchewan and we are a few days behind, you know, time zones and all. So the impact of the government shutdown just finally reached us, and all my internets were gone because of no net neutrality and everything else. But as I was saying before we went into break, during the 1800s and even the early 20th century, there were a number of recessions where the economy had problems, and many of these were times where there was no central bank, and the one consistency about all these things, to include the Forgotten Depression of 1920 and 21, and it's called the Forgotten Depression because, of course, it's been flushed down the memory hole. Everybody's forgotten about it, much like the ones of the 1800s. But the one curious thing, well, actually, it's not curious to somebody who understands economics, but the thing about it is there was no interventions, there were no stimulus programs, there were no jobs programs to where people would go dig ditches and fill them back in. None of this stuff. You didn't have the central banks creating stimulus and artificially inflating the money supply and giving it out to the politically connected, because, as I mentioned, in many of these cases, there were no central banks at the time. And strangely enough, these recessions, they didn't turn into depressions. They were quite short-lived. I mean, the Forgotten Depression of 1920 and 21, I think, was completely over within 18 months, but it started out even worse than the Great Depression. Now, you would think that had the government gone in there and had these stimulus programs and done all these interventions, they could say, look, all these times we did this and it ended quickly. But no, it's the opposite. In the case of the Great Depression, where there was plenty of intervention, that it was nonstop intervention. It lasted pretty much from 1929 to 1945. So how is this, and how does this information get flushed down the memory hole that the economy can actually survive on its own without central planning?
Right. Yeah, there are many depressions that occurred in U.S. and its history, and they resolved themselves very quickly, like within less than a year, and you didn't need government meddling in it to fix it.
But on the occasion where they do meddle, it lasts longer than probably many of them combined.
All right.
And it's really interesting because we were talking about with Venezuela, the price controls. that's one of the things that they were very interested in during the Great Depression. And there's Herbert Hoover has this reputation being free market laissez-faire, and it's quite the opposite. He's actually the architect of most of the New Deal programs, which is one of the reasons why it's called the Hoover Dam and not the Roosevelt Dam. But anyway, under the Agricultural Adjustment Act, because the price of pork was dropping at the store and the farmers weren't getting as much, the government decided that they were going to use supply and demand to keep the prices high. Now, keep in mind, this is a Great Depression when people are short on cash, they don't have money, they're not working, and the government is saying, we have to keep the prices high, artificially high. High prices for the unemployed. Oh, well, we'll just give them welfare to bail them out from the high prices. But anyway, what they did was they ordered the slaughter of 6 million pigs over a period of time. And these pigs were being thrown into wood chippers and just killed. And the meat was destroyed. In the Great Depression, when people are hungry, meat is being destroyed. Well, people took a dim view on just the wholesale slaughter of pigs, and they decided, well, people don't like this, so we're just going to pay the farmers not to produce pork. And this goes along with what they did with the crops. There were a variety of crops that were going to be plowed under, and it turned out that because the donkeys had been trained to walk in between the rows instead of through the rows, they wouldn't do it. So it turns out that the jackasses in the field were smarter than the jackasses in D.C., so they wound up having to burn acres and acres of crops, cotton, food, all this stuff. And here we are in a depression when people are going hungry and they're destroying food to keep the prices high for the people that are unemployed to pay more. And it's just absolute lunacy that people still buy into this notion of the central planning and these controls of the economy.
That story kind of reminds me of one of the greatest agriculturalists, Mao of China, who believed that you'll have great bounty of food if you plant seeds close together, because he had a philosophy that happy plants grow when happy seeds are planted next to each other, because I guess
we're all in this together.
Yeah. And so the seeds were planted too close together, of course, you know, as Mao dictated, and as a result they're competing for resources in the same spot, and you had crops failures of it coming out, and then led to one of the largest man-made starvations, famine in history. So bad under communism that parents were eating their own children.
Same with the Ukraine.
Yeah, same with Ukraine. That came before Mao's, the Holodomor famine that the Russians did, the communists did. And that was before Hitler's final solution, his massacre of the Jews. And many people can say that he studied how the communists did theirs and their attempts and success and their genocide of Ukrainians, and mirrored that. But, you know, you don't hear a lot about the communist side of it. You don't hear much about
the key thing about Ukraine is it has always been Europe's breadbasket. It has been a place where agriculture has flourished. And During the communist times, when the starvation happened, Stalin had ordered that the produce be taken out of Ukraine and that they be left with nothing. So it's not like there was crop failures. It was the policy of starving people, or as the neocons would call it, Stalin put economic sanctions on the Ukrainians, and they didn't have an oil for food program. But yeah, so Stalin, Mao, Marx, they've all written amazing diet books where you lose a lot of weight.
Yeah, they certainly have. I think the next show we got around, we should probably just do one on entirely on communism. Or maybe even immigration, because another effect that the Ukrainians had, because Ukrainians, one reason they target them is the Ukrainians were a bit, had more a tendency of uprising. There was a lot of revolt risk. They're not, I guess, toying the line. Very difficult to towards they're not as agreeableness. And so that would be one of the main reasons why they targeted the Ukrainians and sought to create this famine, this genocide, I guess.
They had another thing to freedom the, just a little too hard?
Yeah. Yeah. And in terms of immigration and relating them back, the Russians would immigrate a lot of Russians into their territory. So that way, over time, the culture would become more agreeable. The culture would change, the demographic. And that was a tactic that they did then as well, which you can find information of Democrats doing the same to bring in them to vote today, to vote left, and why the 1965 Immigration Act was changed from European to concentration on third world immigrants.
Well, the thing about immigrants coming in and voting, and I don't support anybody voting, but the complaint is that they're going to vote for more socialistic policies. They're going to vote for expansions of government. They're going to vote for more spending. They're going to vote for more every horrible thing that government does. So I guess the one thing that people should not be complaining about is that they're not assimilating and becoming full-blown Americans, because Americans are doing that. So when they say, well, they're voting for more socialists, okay, are they voting Republican or Democrat? Because either way, you're getting socialism.
I guess you could look like maybe, well, one-third of Americans vote. It's not everyone, right? So it's one-third, and then that one-third
is 46.9%.
Yeah, it's split. So I guess American would be, to be American would be not to vote, right?
Yeah. Yeah, 46.9% abstained, or 46.9% of eligible voters abstained in the 2016 election. So that was the clear majority of the population voted for nobody.
Nobody. That's the American thing to do.
Yeah. Nobody keeps his promises. Nobody scales back government. Nobody reduces the debt. Vote for nobody.
I love it.
Yeah, because Sweet Meteor Death was just a disappointment. I thought he would do so much better.
Right. But at the same time, I think, aside from like just the voting aspect of it, I think there's a lot of a problems that does come sometimes with the immigration, that you could say incompatibility of some cultures. And you'll find like there's this interesting, and again, we should probably do like a whole show on this. It would be a lot of fun to do. Like, people are talking about like this huge rise of crime that happened in like in the 1960s, and people say, you know, that maybe that was the war on drugs that just started to kick off. But you know, you'll still find something similarities in other places when there was this concentration of colliding cultures, like in India, and you have like millions of people, you know, the Indians and Pakistanis just slaughtering each other. And here, in like the 1960s, after the 1965 immigration reform, you had an enormous spike in crime that had that started to clash with the government-backed to subsidize immigration of a different culture that was not of European kind. And so today, like even in terms of like immigrants, you know, they account for a lot of, you could say, it's a good substantial amount of violence in the country. And I think that's something worth looking into. And
we should talk about this sometime.
Yeah.
We will be back. At least I hope I will be.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Freedom Fiends. Redemption in the third act. Have we mentioned Cell 411 yet?
No, not yet.
I don't think we have. Cell 411. It's an excellent way of doing things. And I'm sure that they could use that down in Venezuela where the police are busy looting and pillaging. And that way you can call your neighbors instead of the police. As a matter of fact, you can call your neighbors because of the police. And if they have any servers going down there still, or if they have internet service down there still, you can even stream the video and save it on a secure server so that the Venezuelan police can't delete it off of your phone, but they'll probably delete you because that's how socialism works. But anyway, get cell411.com. It's a wonderful innovation, and when Venezuela finally collapses, I'm sure somebody down there's gonna be looking into it. So
absolutely.
We have a fun little story to leave with. What's old is new, I think would be a good way to describe it. And this involves our good buddy Chuck Schumer, the evil man who led the shutdown of the non-essential government services that really PO'd the small government constitutional conservative Republicans. The Consumer Product Safety Commission should crack down on detergent companies whose super concentrated cleanser pods look so much like candy that even a sitting senator wanted to gobble one. What's that you say? A sitting senator wanted to gobble a pod? Since April, 40 local children in the city have mistakenly downed the colorful laundry packs, such as Tide Pods, leading to numerous hospitalizations, some emergency intestinal surgery, and pangs of hunger of Senator Charles Schumer. The incidents are skyrocketing, Schumer said Sunday, joined by several medical professionals. Probably had a bunch of people on stage wearing white coats and everything. These pods were supposed to make household chores easier, not tempt our children to swallow harmful chemicals. I saw one on my staffer's desk and I wanted to eat it. Really? I thought they have a congressional cafeteria. But anyway, right. Schumer said 200 cases had been reported to poison control centers nationwide as of May, but that figure jumped to 1,210 by the end of June. In one case, a 15-month-old who bit into a packet and breathed the contents began vomiting and had to be put on a ventilator. The one-time-use clothing cleaners are designed to reduce spills in bulky bottles, but they are more dangerous because the brightly colored pods are highly concentrated, Schumer said. Oh, the colors is kind of like a laser beam for a cat. Medical experts cautioned that the colorful plastic packaging is especially tempting because it looks like a teething toy. They look yummy and like candy, said Dr. Tamara, really long name that starts with a K, director of medical education in the Department of Emergency Medicine at Lenox Hill Hospital. She warned parents to keep the pods and colorful dishwashing packets in high and locked storage spaces. I could go on and on.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous.
Tell me, what's your favorite flavor?
Oh, I like whisk. But here's the kicker. Here's the kicker. This is from September 9th of 2012. People still haven't figured out not to eat Tide Pods. You know, I think it's really interesting that we are living in a time where the stores have locked up the Tide Pods and taken those off of the shelf and put the iPods on the shelf to make room for the Tide Pods in the locked up cases. What in the happy Halloween is going on? Why can't the world just end?
And I try to pick up my favorite flavor today, Minty French, fresh, like my mints. It goes great with the. It goes really good with a glass of sparkling bleach. And one thing I want to say, Jeff Dye said it best: once we get kids to stop eating Tide Pods, we'll move them on to Austrian business cycle theory, and then quantum mechanics.
Yeah, maybe you can get your Tide Pods with a Chateau Febreze. Anyway, nice. Thanks for coming on tonight, Cal. Thanks for picking up the slack when I got zucked or droned. Oof. And thanks, everybody, for listening. For more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com.
Stay liberated.